FS Insider, a premium edition of the Financial Sense News Hour. Today's host is Senior Editor Chris Sheridan.
Joining us on the show today is Ron Stoefferle, the co-author of In Gold We Trust, and also the managing partner and fund manager at Incrementum, based in Liechtenstein. And Ron joins us today in Liechtenstein. It's quite late over there where he's at. So Ron, I appreciate you coming on the show again. We're looking forward to discussing this year's In Gold We Trust report.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me. Always a great pleasure. And I think if we discuss the whole report, it's probably going to take 4 or 5 hours because we've produced quite a brick of research again.
Yeah, the full report. You have an executive summary, which is nice. So people have access to both the full report that they can download on your website, or there's also the executive summary that's quite a bit shorter. But yeah, the full report we should disclose to all of you if you are brave enough to read it. And I would recommend that you do so. Lots of good info in it. It's 230 pages. So clearly, I don't know where you find the time to compile. I mean, you're basically writing a book every year.
Yeah, that's true. Honestly, I also don't know how we're making it every year, but there's just so many interesting topics to discuss, so much coming up every year. And therefore, yeah, I'm quite astonished that we made it again. But I have to say, nowadays, it's a really big project for us. So there's all together, you know, in layout, in crunching the numbers, researchers, proofreaders, there's like 13 people involved. I couldn't do it all on my own. It's a really big thing for us. And we're really putting in quite a lot of time, resources, and also love into this report. So for us, it's always a bit like giving birth. And I think this year's baby is quite a nice one again.
Well, I love talking about gold because it's related to so many different things in the financial markets, macro factors. I mean, we're talking about central bank policy, the dollar, different currencies, geopolitical factors, safe havens. There's a lot that goes into gold. So it's just such a fascinating topic. You know, last year in your report, we talked about the everything bubble, the idea that stocks, bonds, a number of different asset classes, real estate, I think we should throw in there as well, are all overvalued, essentially. I mean, there's not many places where you see cheap valuations. And your view was that we are in the early stages of a new bull market in gold. Given the behavior of gold since then, where do you stand on that view today?
We're basically confirming our view that we're in the early stages of a new bull market. Actually, we wrote that gold is a bit dancing like cha-cha-cha, one step forward, one step to the side, and one step back. Price action is actually pretty boring at the moment, I would say. However, I mean, 2017 was a fantastic year for gold. It was up 14%. It was actually up in every currency but the euro, which is quite sad for investors over here in the eurozone. However, I think the fact that gold is performing really well and nobody actually really cares about that, I think that's a pretty interesting divergence. I think that Adrian Day, a colleague that I highly respect, he wrote a brilliant thing about gold. And he said, people are actually expecting too much from gold. We should not forget that equity markets are still trading at or close to all-time highs. Bond markets are still doing pretty well. Real estate is doing well. The art market is doing well. We're seeing that cryptocurrencies are kind of stealing the show from gold. We're seeing that trust in the financial system, trust in banks, even in politicians, is coming back. We're seeing rising rates in the US. We're seeing quantitative tightening. So per definition, I would say that's a horrible environment for gold on the surface. Nobody actually needs gold in this Goldilocks scenario. But I think, and that's one of the main points that we're making in the report, this monetary policy tide that is completely reversing from globalized quantitative easing to globalized quantitative tightening, because it's not only the Federal Reserve that is getting more tight. I think this liquidity party that we're having for 10 years now, and everybody's kind of got used to that, let's say, free beer in the markets. And of course, that's going to have impact on asset market valuations. And I think this is really one of the main points that we're making in the report. The liquidity tide is shifting, and that's going to have massive consequences for financial markets.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that liquidity is akin to feeding investors beer or alcohol, perhaps keeping them from making the best choices, perhaps we should say. We just spoke with Peter Buchvar, and he said that, you know, essentially monetary easing, quantitative easing, and low interest rates are the equivalent of beer goggles, and that the beer goggles are now going to be coming off very soon. The Fed with quantitative tightening, probably the ECB, and then, you know, collectively, when you look at the central banks moving towards a tightening posture around the 2019 timeframe, that's when the beer goggles come off and investors start to look at valuations again. What are your thoughts?
Of course. And I mean, of course, we all know that valuations are quite high. And I think if we put on a longer term view, I think what distinguishes the current phase decidedly from the run up to earlier big stock exchange crashes like 1929, 87, 2000, 2008 is that we're seeing simultaneously high valuations of stocks and bonds, because previously bonds would help contain losses from stock markets as they were negatively correlated. But now bond valuations are in extremely high territory. There's also a study by Deutsche Bank that we're featuring, and they've got brilliant chart with the combined valuation of the stock market and the bond market. And their conclusion is that we're seeing for bonds and equities the highest valuations since the year 1800. So, of course, we also got very, very low rates. We've got negative real rates. But that also means that the more rates rise, the more fragile everything becomes. And the more realistic it gets that this everything bubble will pop. And, you know, we've seen a couple of rate hikes in the last quarters. There will be probably three more this year. We're seeing that LIBOR has risen significantly, which will have tremendous effects on refinancings, etc. We're seeing that quantitative tightening will really kick in the next couple of months. It will be $50 billion US dollars every month starting in October. So this year, the Fed Reserve will soak out $420 billion out of the market. Next year and the year after, it will be $600 billion already. So this is really big numbers. And it's really interesting when I'm talking to people in the industry, it seems that nobody really cares about quantitative tightening. So I think that investors were underestimating the consequences of quantitative easing. It has massive consequences. It was basically the air for this everything bubble. So why shouldn't quantitative tightening have the reverse consequences? Now, what's going to happen if both shares and bonds dive in a bear market? What's going to be the safe haven? Is it going to be cash? Is it going to be real estate? Is it going to be Bitcoin? Or is it going to be gold? I'm pretty sure that gold will be one of the biggest beneficiaries once this everything bubble pops.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question that you said. You know, what happens when both stocks and bonds correct? Because as you noted, that Deutsche Bank study showing that the combined valuations of those two asset classes is the highest since 1800. And then, as you just noted, that goes back to the idea that we're in this everything bubble. When those crash or when those correct, are we going to see gold benefit? That leads to my next question, because you write something that's pretty interesting in your report, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this. You say that the simultaneous correction of equities, bonds, and the US dollar at the end of January may offer a glimpse into the erosion of the currency's safe haven status. Do you mind explaining why that is?
Well, we have seen that normally if markets correct, there's this traditional reaction that money is flowing into the US dollar, into US treasuries. Now, end of January, beginning of February, we have seen one big warning shot, I would say. We have seen that there was some sort of panic in the markets again. We have seen that lots of liquidity kind of volatility kind of products got into massive, massive problems. So I think that was, as I've said, the first big warning shot for financial markets. And the interesting observation that we've made was that this natural reaction by financial market participants, meaning liquidate your holdings and go into the US dollar, go into US treasuries, this time really did not happen. And perhaps we're kind of putting too much on that topic, but I think this is a clear sign, and we've got quite a lot of tables and statistics showing that this safe haven aspect of the US dollar index is clearly diminishing. Now, one big topic of the report is also the turning of the tide in the global monetary architecture, this de-dollarization. And I think that's, we already discussed that, Chris. I think this de-dollarization is a long process, but we're seeing basically on a daily basis really important agreements between emerging market countries. For example, invoicing their trades not in the US dollar, but in their respective currencies. So I think this de-dollarization is happening, and we should not forget that last year was a really horrible year for the US dollar. I think the fact that equity markets and also commodities were rising that strongly, that was also quite a confident sign of what we call in German Abwertungshoss, meaning kind of a devaluation boom. So that's one thing that I'm seeing from my point of view. The US dollar is in a secular bear market. Of course, the last couple of weeks, we have seen some reaction on the upside. But I think, and I think the Trump administration is very clear on that, they need a weak dollar for this reindustrialization to happen. And actually, since Donald Trump is in office, the US dollar broke down massively. And I think that's going to continue.
Yeah, you know, we just spoke with David Marsh. He's at the OMFIF yesterday, and it was interesting because they noted they compile a global public investor report every year tracking 750 different global institutions that accumulatively hold, I think it's 36 trillion in assets. So it's central banks, pension funds, sovereign wealth funds. And they look at, you know, how they're investing, where they're putting their money, and long-term trends. And, you know, he noted in 2014 when they first did their report that there was a massive worldwide shift by these global public investors into the stock market. And in their most recent report, he noted something interesting regarding this idea of de-dollarization. And that is the increasing trend of central banks accumulating Chinese renminbi, so the Chinese currency. And it's still a very small percentage of their holdings, but he does expect that to grow. And when it came to this idea of the reserve currency status of the dollar, he felt that that would be in place for another 50 years. And he even seemed to think that that's what China leadership is expecting, that they don't think the US dollar is going to be replaced anytime soon, but that the Chinese renminbi will continue to gain as a percentage of reserve holdings in central banks in the years ahead. And it could move to second place by, you know, 10, 15 years. So that was his thoughts, you know, in terms of reserve currency status and where the dollar holds. Yeah, I know that does play an important factor into the performance of gold, because as you, I think you noted earlier, I mean, all commodities are essentially priced in dollar terms. So there is that strong inverse relationship. If the price of the dollar goes up, then the price of commodities go down and vice versa. So you have tracked the performance of gold in all the different currencies. And as you noted, it was really across the board. Gold had done well, except for in the euro. But you even bypass a lot of those currency differential problems because, I mean, you know, there's so many different currencies you can look at. And you look at what's called the world gold price. So let's talk about that a little bit.
You know, over here in Europe, for example, everybody is kind of obsessed with the dollar price of gold. But if I earn and invest my money in euro terms, I should follow the euro price of gold more closely, of course. So what we have found out is that having a look at gold in different currencies, it kind of shows you in what stage of the bull or bear market we are. And we have seen that in 2015, 2014 already, gold kind of stabilized in many currencies. And we have seen that in this so-called world gold price, which is based on the trade-weighted value of the US dollar. We have seen that we actually established a bull market, meaning higher highs and higher lows, already beginning of 2013. And actually, for this world gold price, we're not too far away from the all-time highs at the moment. So I think that's a very interesting observation. Having a look at some of the emerging market currencies, for example, the Turkish lira, gold is trading at an all-time high at the moment. We're not talking about the Bolivar in Venezuela. So what people tend to forget is that gold is trading really, really well in many currencies. Also in euro terms, it's up 3% since the beginning of the year. Not that bad. So I think that from an analytical point of view, it's very, very important not to only follow the dollar price of gold, but to have a more broad view on the currency space. Because let's face it, gold is nothing else than a currency. It's the oldest currency, the oldest money around. So why shouldn't we follow it in many different currencies and not only in the US dollar? Because as I've said before, I think this de-dollarization trend is big. We're in the middle of it. I think there were some major steps in the last couple of months with the petro yuan, and therefore I think that's really an important way to look at the gold market.
Ron, what are your thoughts on the gold mining space? It seems that, you know, it's really languished. It hasn't seen quite the strength that perhaps we've seen in gold. Of course, it is much more volatile, so you're going to see much more upside and downside in that space. But what do you see in the gold mining space? Is this an area that you believe is attractive for investment yet? Or do you really need to see some more upside movement on gold first before doing that?
Yeah, well, I don't think it can really decouple from the gold performance itself. Actually, I would say that the price action was extremely boring the last couple of weeks, the last couple of months. We have seen very, very low volatility. But I think as a contrarian investor, that's actually what you want to see. You want to see very little interest in something. You want to see extremely negative sentiments. You want to see leverage, in this example, on rising gold and silver prices. You want to see some creative destruction, as Schumpeter would have called that. And we have seen all that in the gold mining space. So from my point of view, it's probably the most contrarian investment that you can make. And I think, you know, just to give you some numbers, the XAO S&P 500 ratio, so mining stocks divided by the S&P 500, is at the lowest level since 2000, when we have seen the bottom of the big bear market in mining stocks and the beginning of the big bull market. If we're having a more longer term comparison with the Barron's Gold Mining Index relative to the S&P 500, we are even at the lowest level in 78 years. So not only relative to the broad equity market like the S&P 500, but also relative to the gold price itself, mining stocks are extremely cheap. And we have seen that the sentiment is very negative. We have seen that there's been quite a lot going on in the sector. So I think the crash and basically the longest and most severe bear market in history. We should not forget that the HUY index was down 83%, which was the biggest drawdown in history. So since that, we have kind of stabilized in Elliott Wave terms. It probably would have been like the first wave, and now the correction is the second wave. So we're all waiting for the wave three. And I think, as I've said before, mining stocks are making money again. They kind of got used to lower gold prices. They can live with that gold price environment. They will make significant free cash flow next year, but also the year after. We're going to see between 4.8 and 6 billion in free cash flow for the mining stocks in the gold bucks index. So I think it's a very, very contrarian investment. It is a hated sector where most of the companies have made their homework. And therefore, I think that the leverage on a rising gold price is actually higher than ever.
Ron, last question for you. One part of your report, you look at increasing risk that you see abroad and also with the U.S. economy. What's your view on when another U.S. recession will hit?
When exactly?
When? Yeah.
15th of January.
Perfect. Got you on record.
No. You know, the thing is, Chris, I think it's quite astonishing. We updated the chart that we had in the last report already. And we crunched the numbers based on the Bloomberg survey. So they are asking like the 78 most important and famed and smartest and whatever economists all over the world about their further growth forecasts for the next 3 years. And actually for 2018, 2019 and 2020, what would you say? How many analysts do see a recession coming?
I think you asked me this question last time and I failed it. So this time I'm going to say none.
None. Zero. No.
I got it this time.
So I don't want to say that the US is going to hit the recession next year or the year after, but if recessionary fears come up, nobody is positioned for that. Nobody. And I think we should not forget that there's quite a lot of topics or facts that would lead me to the conclusion that a recession will come sooner or later. We're seeing rising rates. We're seeing quantitative tightening. We're seeing consumer confidence at a record high. We're seeing an M&A boom. We're seeing rising default rates, rising write-offs on credit card debt, weakening consumption rates. We're seeing the yield curve is flattening and will invert in a couple of months, probably. We're seeing strongly rising private and public debt ratios. We're seeing a sharp rise in oil prices. So in some sectors, it seems it's as good as it gets. And normally that's like what we're seeing at the very end of the cycle. Dave Rosenberg said, you know, over here, we don't understand baseball, but I know what it's going to mean. We're like in the seventh or eighth inning of this game. So it's going to end pretty soon. As far as I know, there are 9 innings, right?
Yeah. And we're in late innings is, I think, what Rosenberg usually says.
Yeah. So, and then I totally agree to that. Now, why is that important for the price of gold? We crunched the numbers and we said that actually recessions are an excellent environment for gold because the price of gold, of course, discounts that there will be monetary easing, that there will be lowering rates, that there will be fiscal stimulus and so on. And that's a positive environment for gold, of course. But the big question is, where will rates go? Because normally the Federal Reserve within a recession lowers rates by at least 500 basis points. Now, we would be massively below zero if that's going to happen again. And we also comment on some suggestions by our special friend, Kenneth Rogoff, who is very, very vocal and open about negative rates. And I think a negative rate environment in the course of the next recession crisis or whatever, that should be a pretty, pretty good environment for gold. And probably this will go hand in hand with the stock markets and bond markets and real estate not doing so well. So this would probably be the safe haven where every sane investor will go to. And therefore, I think if you see that the percentage of a US recession is higher than actually the market discounts at the moment, then you should at least hold some gold.
Well, Ron, I want to end it there because I do know it is late for you in Liechtenstein, and I appreciate you joining us on FS Insider to give us an update on your 2018 In Gold We Trust report. What would be the best way for our listeners to get their hands on that report?
It's every year available for free. You can download it on our webpage, ingoldwetrust.li, which stands for Liechtenstein, or ingoldwetrust.report. And as you've said, Chris, there's a short version, a compact version, and there's also the extended version, which is, you know, you should take some time, probably a weekend, to study it. But I hope that it's really worth the time because we're touching so many different angles. We've got two exclusive interviews with the nephew of Friedrich August von Hayek, but also with Luke Roman, an analyst that we like quite a lot. We're writing about financial repression, the failure of macroeconomics. We're writing about de-dollarization, the portfolio characteristics of gold. So it's, again, quite a holistic view on the gold market, but not only on gold. I would say on all major asset classes.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And Ron, thank you again for coming on. As he said, you can go to In Gold We Trust. You can just Google that and find their website, or we'll also have a link to the website and the report where this interview is located at Financial Sense. Ron, it was a pleasure. We look forward to speaking to you again in the future.
Thank you very much, Chris. Vielen Dank, as we would say over here. And I'm looking forward to being on the show again. Thank you very much. Have a good one.
So as Ron noted in this interview, there are a number of signs in his mind that we are getting closer to a recession here in the US. He stated the fact that interest rates are increasing and that if you look especially at the shadow Fed's fund rate, which was tracking the effects of quantitative easing combined with interest rates, we got down to, I believe it was around -3% on the shadow Fed funds rate in 2015, 2016, before they reversed course. And now with all the rate hikes that we've seen, this tightening cycle that we've been in is about what you would see in prior tightening cycles, prior to a recession. So there are a number of signs that we're getting closer and closer to those later innings when the amount of tightening starts to weigh on the economy. And as many of you know, leverage ratios are up back at all-time highs, if not exceeding what we saw in 2007, 2008. So in that environment, you know, he raised a really good question. What happens when we do enter into another recession and the Fed goes on pause and then lowers rates by, you know, 500 basis points, 5% or so? Well, in that case, if history plays out, essentially, we would be seeing a negative interest rate policy in the US. That is not something we did see, of course, after the 2008 recession, because the Fed lowered them to zero and then launched quantitative easing. In this case, it's possible we could see them actually go below zero, as we saw in Europe and other countries around the world. So if that happens and we are looking at negative interest rates, what is that going to do for gold? Especially when you see that stocks and bonds are both at all-time record highs. As he noted, you know, there's a Deutsche Bank chart showing that if you combine the valuation of stocks and bonds together, with the highest since the 1800s. So if we start to see pressure on those two dominant asset classes, is gold going to be that safe haven that Ron and others believe? There's a good chance it will. So that is going to be the big thing to watch as we see another recession develop. Is the price of gold going to benefit? Are people going to plow into gold mining stocks? And at this point, as Ron said, economists are not expecting a recession to occur in the coming years. So as we see the yield curve invert, I think that that thinking will shift. But many people are not expecting any major type of downdraft in the economy yet. The economy is running fairly strong. So lots of great topics that Ron brought up in today's interview. And of course, we only skimmed the surface because, as we noted, the full report is around 230 pages, but you can also access the executive summary if you want to gain access to a number of the charts and figures. There's a lot to chew through. And even the full report itself, if you didn't have the time to read it, you can definitely skim through a lot of the different charts that they have to give you an idea if you want to read further in those sections. So lots of great material on there. Again, I will have a link where this interview is located on Financial Sense if you want to access it there, or you can simply Google In Gold We Trust 2018, and that'll take you directly to their website. I'm Chris Sheridan. You're listening to FS Insider.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.